Welcoming back from the Chicago Tribune, Chris Borelli. Thank you so much for joining us again, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You betcha. I saw your article in the Trib, and my eyes lit up. I mean, I went into a different gear. I have known about, I'm not going to repeat the story of how I found out, but I have known about this Peshtigo fire since about the middle 80s, and I've never seen, although that doesn't mean there hasn't been, I've never seen an article with the depth and understanding of what went on like yours did. You went up there, apparently. You went to Peshtigo? Can you tell people where is Peshtigo, Wisconsin?
It is, so it's about roughly, I guess, an hour north of Sheboygan, I suppose. I'm trying,
really?
I'm trying to picture it now. It's north of Green Bay. It's north of
north
Green
of
Bay.
Green
so
Bay.
Like just north of Green Bay. It's about 10 minute drive from the border of the Upper Peninsula. So right,
there.
Yeah, so it's very wooded. You know, it's there's a river that runs through the town, and it empties out into Green Bay, basically. So yeah, so it's, if you can kind of picture that, that's right where it was, and that's, it was a strategically located town for a very good reason. You know, because it was full of wood. It was full of trees, and that wish they could turn into lumber. And William Ogden, who was the first mayor of Chicago, he built a huge lumber business up there, and it created the town essentially, mostly because he could move the wood through down the river into Green Bay and down to Chicago pretty quickly. Sorry, I'm kind of answering your question.
No. Keep going. No, I'm loving it.
Well, anyway, but essentially, yeah. Well, I mean, and though there's a lot of it's basically speculation for why this fire started in the first place. There's a fair amount of evidence that basically there was a push to build a railroad that led from Peshtigo to Chicago. And there was a real drive to clear the brush and clear the land at a time when the Midwest was very, very dry. There were already fires across Minnesota, in Michigan, in Wisconsin. And it was just bad. You know, it was a bad timing. And probably the fire there was a almost like a conflation of fires, of several fires at once. It happened the same night as Chicago.
I find it. Maybe the word is not ironic, but when I read your article and found out that this guy was the first mayor of Chicago, and he had a lumber company,
right?
And Chicago, and he had the lumber company in Peshtigo, Wisconsin, the same. And I was reading about the Chicago fire and what led up to it, and as you mentioned, it had been very, very, it was like a drought. It had been very, very dry. Most of the houses in Chicago were made out of wood. Is that also true of Peshtigo?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The hotels, and they had lumber yards. And yeah, I mean, it literally was a town built on wood. You know what I mean? In a sense.
Right.
So, so everything was, yeah. I mean, there were some stone
right.
buildings, but. Yeah, obviously, but for the most part, yeah, it was based around the lumber industry. So, ironically, I guess.
Ironically, lumber yard industry owned by the first mayor of Chicago, which I find to be an amazing coincidence, and then both cities go up in flames on the same day, and it's one of the reasons.
He loses everything in Chicago. Yeah. And he loses everything in Wisconsin. Same day.
Yeah. Because basically. One of the reasons, anyway, is that everything is made out of wood, and it's just dry as heck. So, you know, almost anything could spark that kind of fire. What about the difference? You know, why do you think people don't know about the Peshtigo fire? Is it simply because that's Peshtigo and we're Chicago? You know, we're millions of people, that's thousands of people.
Yeah, I mean, that's a hard question to answer, you know, but I mean, I can tell you that there in Peshtigo, their answer for is exactly what you just said, which is essentially, well, Chicago is Chicago, and we're this little town in northern Minnesota, northern Wisconsin, and nobody is, really paying as much attention to us. So, yeah, I mean, it kind of Chicago got the, got the press, it got the attention.
Right.
I mean, there are some practical things, too, which is that Chicago was able to communicate with the outside world, right? The fire wasn't so bad that we couldn't get, Peshtigo could not. It was completely cut off from the outside world. So it actually took a little bit of time for people to realize what happened there. In fact, I think this is in the story. I mean, there's so much material that I couldn't include everything, obviously. But the governor of Wisconsin at the time was in Chicago, helping Chicago, and he, this is how little was known about Peshtigo at the moment. He was in Chicago helping Chicago, and then he was told about what happened, and he basically redirected all of Wisconsin's aid to Chicago back to Wisconsin within a couple of days. So in terms of like why they didn't get the attention, I think it's because it was, Chicago is this gigantic metropolis, or at least becoming a metropolis, and here was a town, and in a small town, basically people still lived on farms in the area, and really when we talk about this fire, we're talking about a fire that kind of went across Lower Door County, that basically encompassed about 16 towns. So, it doesn't look as dramatic as an entire, a downtown burning down in the same sense. But it is in the sense that it was raised. I mean, it was just leveled. I mean, I got into this in the story that there's a fire museum in the town, and it's been there since the 60s. And what's kind of interesting about this place is, it's a cute place. You walk in and it almost feels a little bit like a Goodwill store or like an antique store or something like that. But there's very little actually on the fire. There's almost no artifacts from the fire because almost nothing survived.
Yeah, I can understand that. Yes. I mean,
in a practical sense, like literally there's this entire building, there's a single glass case that contains like a broken watch, a cup. I mean, it's just like here a few things. I think a Bible, oddly enough, was found floating in the river. But almost nothing survived. So this place that's a fire museum is actually, strangely and almost kind of, I think, eerily, it's really a museum to the things that people donated to the survivors after the fire. It's just full of the stuff that was given to these people because they had nothing at that point. And in fact, some people ended up with more than they had before the fire because people were so generous after the fire. I mean, aid came in from all over the country and beyond. So, it's kind of an eerie museum, and next door to the museum is a cemetery, and this is completely unnerving to me. You walk into the cemetery and there's a sign that with an arrow that says mass grave.
Mass grave.
Mass grave. And you follow the sign and it is indeed a grave of, I think, about 300 of the people who died there. And they're essentially in a sort of a, slightly larger rectangular plot. There were almost no bodies identified. There were apparently what's in the actual grave is some ashes, some parts, very few intact bodies. I mean, people, there's so many stories that were kind of gruesome. I couldn't even include in the piece. I mean, one thing that happened was that people were leaping into water wells just to escape. And, they thought they could have kind of escaped. But what happened is that there's basically a firestorm above them. And it sucked all the oxygen out. So they were kind of trapped at the bottom of these wells that became essentially oxygenless fire traps. So you had entire families huddled at the bottom of wells and they couldn't go anywhere. So it's hell. I mean, literally hellish, hellish. And it's amazing that it happened about 250 miles away on the same night.
Yeah. In your article, it says the Chicago Tribune, reporting from the scene, compared it to Sodom, Gomorrah, and Pompeii. That's pretty heavy.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, it reads a little heightened, you know, some of the reporting. But frankly, you know, it's not. It was insane, you know. So it's not. I guess it does. It does kind of bear some comparison. It's not. It's not Pompeii, but it's
right.
But the town never. The town really, and the people in the town will tell you this too. You know, it never recovered really. You know, it never became what it had sort of promised. It never became kind of this hub of lumber. Even though there is lumber, there's still a lumber mill there. One thing I kind of mentioned in the piece that I still am, this is probably naivete on my part. They still have even, you know, 150 years later, it's still a volunteer fire department. That's all, you know, and they are surrounded by woods, and it's, you know, it does get dry, and they do have big fires. So,
Well, there was one thing we didn't bring up, and I'll wrap it up with, is the,
sure,
the
sure.
death toll, as I understand it in your article, the Peshtigo fire killed between 1,300 and 1,500 people, and the Chicago fire killed approximately 300. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and it's a much, and it also covered a much wider area.
Right.
But, you know, even that number of 15, I mean, there are some historians that think it might be almost like 1,000 people low, because there weren't very good records kept. I mean, more people lived on farms there than, you know, maybe people actually realized. The woman who runs the Historical Society, I remember she told me that the day before the fire, because they were clearing all this land for a railroad, about 200 people had come in from out of town just to work, to begin working on the railroad. Those people were not, you know, they weren't identified in any kind of census record. So, so it very likely was much higher than 1,500 people even.
Well, thank you so much for taking time for your from your evening, Chris, to join us here. I appreciate talking to you. And
no problem.
It was a great, great article, and we're giving Peshtigo some of its due here at 720 WGN.